Well, finally today, a little political history prompted by a small moment in Donald Trump's economic speech yesterday that we're still thinking about. Trump was talking about how he'd reform the tax code, and he said this.
As part of this reform, we will eliminate the carried interest deduction, well-known deduction, and other special interest loopholes that have been so good for Wall Street investors and for people like me, but unfair to American workers.
Now, did Mr. Trump just give us a window into his taxes? Maybe, but probably not, because the Republican nominee continues to buck tradition and refuses to release his tax returns, saying he won't do so as long as he's being audited by the IRS. But where exactly did this tradition come from? Look back to the 1970s and another law and order politician.
People have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
President Richard Nixon, uttering a line he'd never shake off in 1973. Boston University journalism professor Mitchell Zuckoff writes about how Nixon and his tax shenanigans gave rise to the tax return as a test of presidential character. His article appeared in the New York Times, and Mitchell Zuckoff joins us now. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Meghna.
So first of all, take us back to before 1973 when Nixon uttered that famous line. I mean, why did we even start thinking about the fact that presidents should be releasing their tax returns?
Sure. The story really dates to 1969. Up until then, there was this sort of weird tiny loophole in the tax code. It benefited only four people on the planet. They all were either sitting or former presidents. So in 1969, if you were had been a president of the United States or was sitting as president, you could donate your papers to an archive in exchange for a giant tax deduction. And so Congress sort of looked at this in 69 and said, wait a second, aren't presidents' papers already the public's property?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So they said, we're going to close that loophole. But Nixon claimed on his 1969 taxes that he had donated 1,000 boxes of his papers to the National Archive.
And he claimed a massive deduction
It was worth about $2.5 million today. It was, at the time, about $500,000. It was enough to wipe out basically all of his earnings for several years.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he makes this deduction, and then he pays in 1970, you know, $800 in taxes, and then again in 71, basically the equivalent of if he had made $8,000 when he was making over $400,000.
Now, the story about how we found out
yes.
how much he paid in taxes is interesting in and of
yes.
itself, because he wasn't releasing his tax
right.
returns, right?
Right. You know, this was all very quiet until you may have heard of Watergate. So Watergate comes out, and in the midst of Watergate, there's a civil suit related to Watergate, and during a deposition, a presidential aide mentions this deduction and mentions this donation. In addition to taking advantage of this, he had backdated the deed with which he had donated it to the archives.
In your New York Times article, you give the specific date that he had backdated the donation to March 27th, 1969,
correct.
Which would have put it before Congress
just
changed the law.
In time.
But it turns out that in reality, the donation hadn't actually been signed off until April 1970.
Yes. And one thing I couldn't get into the story, a little sort of side note, this is so Nixon. You got to love Nixon. You know, he's consistent in his sort of, you know, weaselly behavior. He never even signed that deed. He had one of his aides sign that deed. And later, that aide ended up spending 4 months in prison for falsifying documents for Nixon.
Now, we wouldn't have known any of this had it not been for a rumpled hero.
Yes.
Because that's the word you used.
There's got to be a hero in the story.
From the Providence Journal.
Yes. Jack White was a 31-year-old suburban reporter. He was down in Newport, Rhode Island. You know, Washington reporters were swarming. And Jack, who I ended up knowing, I knew Jack in the 1980s when I was a young reporter in Providence. And Jack became kind of a hero of the Rhode Island press corps. And Jack, though, in the 70s, was just like a young reporter doing his thing, and someone leaked to him President Nixon's taxes.
How did that leak happen? Because, you know, I imagine, like, was he sort of hobnobbing on the cocktail set in Newport?
Jack would never reveal his source.
Okay.
Just this week, after the story ran, I talked to Jack's wife and Jack's son, Tim, who's an investigative reporter now in Providence. Tim says he wouldn't even release it to his own family, how he got that break.
Wow.
It was the story of a lifetime.
Specifically, the break that he got was that someone told him or gave him information about how much in taxes Nixon actually paid. that minuscule amount you mentioned earlier.
Yes, exactly. And that tiny amount, it just, it notched everything up five times. Everybody just said, whoa, wait a second. How possibly could the president have paid $700 or $800 in taxes for these years? What's this donation about? And was it made in time? Had he overvalued his papers? And so the pressure mounted, and that's when the I am not a crook, the clip you played earlier, became part of the vernacular, because he was challenged on it down in Disney World during a conference, and he has these immortal lines. And so, if you know, a good rule for politicians, if you have to say, I am not a crook, you probably are. You know.
Well, we actually have a larger excerpt of that
Great.
Moment from the November 1973 nationally broadcast press conference where Nixon uttered those immortal lines. And it's really interesting to hear it all in context, because President Nixon basically goes through this whole list of things that he had done financially, of not owning stocks and selling his house, to claim that he had never publicly profited from the presidency. And then he says this.
I made my mistakes, but in all of my years of public life, I have never profited from public service. I've earned every cent. And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice. And I think, too, that I can say that in my years of public life, that I welcome this kind of examination, because people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
It's just priceless, right?
Yeah. But he still wouldn't release his tax returns after that.
Exactly. And, you know, one small historical note. He had actually been practicing, in my mind, this speech for over 20 years. In 1952, when he was Eisenhower's vice presidential candidate, there was the Checkers speech, where he was called out for a kind of a slush fund that backers had created for him. And he outlined this sort of excruciating, and the only thing I've ever taken is this little dog Checkers, and I'm not giving up Checkers, you know. And so he had been practicing this idea of, I need to defend what I've been up to all these years.
Huh.
So this was Nixon at his best. But as you point out, he still wouldn't release his taxes.
But then the IRS decides it was going to audit him.
Exactly. And the pressure finally did mount to the point where he did release them, even though he was under audit, which is significant today, because that is, of course, what Donald Trump has said is the reason why he won't release them. There's nothing preventing anyone from releasing his or her taxes while under audit.
Yeah. Well, then, of course, Watergate happens.
Yes.
And President Nixon resigns. What happened to him financially as a result of the audit?
He lost almost half of his net worth, because it was found that it was, in fact, a backdated deed. He hadn't made the deadline for this loophole to be closed. And so he had to basically disgorge all of these ill-gotten gains from this tax bonanza.
So he was a crook.
He was a crook. No question.
There's a silver line, or multiple silver linings to your story here. We should mention that Jack White,
yes,
he won the Pulitzer Prize for
he
his
did.
Reporting.
He shared the Pulitzer Prize for National Reporting in 1974.
Okay. And then this, you know, more broadly, and perhaps even more importantly, really, this is what ushered in this era and this
Precisely.
Expectation that presidential candidates and nominees, in advance of becoming the president,
yes,
would release their tax returns to prove to America that they're not crooks.
Exactly. This is a really intimate document, if you will. You know, sort of a very personal document, our taxes. You don't share them normally. But because they are so revelatory, they do say who we are financially in the world. There's that sort of wallet character connection, we might call it. How much you did pay in taxes, what strategies you used to avoid taxes, how much you gave to charity. We've sort of accepted as a culture, even though it's not required, absolutely not required, every president since, with the exception of Ford, who was Nixon's vice president, who released just a summary, has released years and years of taxes with a kind of an understanding that it does say who I am, how I operate in this world.
Mm. So from what you learned and wrote about this history regarding Nixon, do you wonder what effect Donald Trump's continuing refusal to release his tax returns is going to have not so much on this election per se, but future elections, because he is overturning this tradition?
It's a great question. I think, like everything in politics, we sort of look at it and say, well, did it work? And if it works and he's elected, this custom will end. I think people will say, well, Trump didn't have to release it, and he went on to win. But if he loses, and we sort of look back and dissect where he lost, and this is an ongoing drumbeat, if it comes up and is used in the debates and people cite it again and again as questions of transparency, and I think there is the hope that we will go back to the custom going forward.
Well, Mitchell Zuckoff is a journalism professor at Boston University. He wrote about why we ask to see candidates' tax returns for the New York Times. We have a link to Mitch's article at our website, radioboston.org. It was great to have you, and thank you so much for this walk through history.
Thank you, Meghna.
That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We'll see you again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.